So every year, right before Purim, I gave the same version of, a different version, I should say, of the same basic shmooze. The basic idea is there, and it just revolves around these types of issues, and we try to figure something out. And I think I've started the past 4 years with the same Chidush HaRim. Chidush HaRim gives the following mashal. One time, there was a man who decided, that's it, I'm going to go do a sin. And he picked up a bag of money, whole big bag of money, and he said, I'm going to do everything that I want to do. I'm in the mood for chet. So he goes out, goes on the road, and he starts walking toward the chet, together with this bag of money, and he hears these cries that are coming a little bit off the road. So he hears them, he hears cries from a man, a woman, children. He goes off the road, and he looks and he sees that there's a pit that's being used as a jail. Because back then, that's what jails were just pits in the ground. So he hears that there's cries coming from them. He goes down and he looks. He says, what's going on? Told him this is a family. What had happened? The family was, the husband was in charge of a farm. And he was supposed to give certain taxes to the landowner, the poritz. And because he didn't give the landowner the taxes in time, or whatever it was, something had happened, there was an onus. It's because it didn't happen. Not only did he get thrown in jail, not only did he get thrown in the pit to just languish and die, but his family was taken in there as well. The whole family's inside there. They're all going to die, and everything's going to be. We said, how much do you owe? The man mentioned an astronomical sum. He said, that much? How could you owe that much money? You don't understand. I didn't pay taxes the year before, and I didn't pay taxes the year before that. I had a horrible string of years. It's just been really, really bad. And that's the reason why he took us, and he threw us in the pit. So he said, all right, I'm going to try to see what I can do. He finds the jailkeeper, the guy who's in charge, and he says, that person owes X amount of dollars. I have, in this bag right over here, that amount of dollars. Can I give you this bag in order to release these prisoners? The jailkeeper said, 100%. They need to pay their taxes. You give me that money, they'll be out. So he gives them over the money. They release that family out of jail. And this guy feels really good about himself. He didn't go to do the chet. He went back home. So in Shemayim, there was a massive rush. Huge noise going on. Beis Din Shomayla got involved, and they said, such a tzaddik. Look at this tzaddik. Is that his way to do a chet? He stopped himself, and he went and did such a huge mitzvah, pidyon shvuyim. He mamash saved the lives of this man, woman, and their children. Saved their lives. He said, this man deserves the greatest reward. The greatest reward. And they gave him reward. The reward is, he's going to be able to, whatever he asks for, anything he asks for in Shemayim, anything he davens for, will automatically happen for him. That's his reward. He gets the reward of everything, everything that he wants. Then the Mekatrogim got involved. The accusers, the accusing angels. They said, you're giving this man that reward? This is a man who has the propensity to sin. Once he gets another bag of money, he's going to go sin again. You can't give this man that power. That power is too much for a person like him. You can't do it. You can't allow this man to have that. But Beis Din Shemayla said, but that's a psak. He deserves to have that reward. He deserves to be able to daven and get anything he wants. We have to give it to him. So they made a compromise. The Mekatrogim made a compromise together with the defendants, and they said, fine, he will get the reward. He can daven for whatever he wants, but he's going to be constantly drunk. He's going to have such a thirst for liquor, a thirst like you can't imagine. Can't imagine. He'll never be in a sober state to actually daven it. He'll have the ability to, but he'll never mess it up by asking for the wrong thing because he won't be in that state. He won't be able to be in that sober state to do it. And that's it. This man was a complete and utter drunkard. That morning, he woke up and he felt like he had to get a drink. So he pulls out, and he's probably in one of the rooms upstairs. He pulls out his massive liquor bottle, got from Sam's Club, you know, the really nice one. Pulls it out, starts drinking. Right? After an hour, he's gone. He's gone. He just passes out. He's gone for 6-7 hours. He wakes up after 6-7 hours, has such a headache, he takes another bottle. He starts drinking that. And he finds anything he can get. Anything he can get. Every waking hour, this guy is going from place to place to place. And eventually, all the barkeeps, they knew this guy. They knew this guy. They knew he's not going to pay. He doesn't have any money. This guy is just getting drunk and drunk and drunk and drunk. They started giving him, every day, one guy gave him a little bit of tzedakah. They would each give him a certain shot of really, really hard liquor that would knock the guy out for a couple hours. And everybody said, all right, we'll give him this time, we'll give him that time. And he would just go from place to place to place his whole life. Meanwhile, the other side of town, the Baal Shem Tov was having an issue. There was a major drought that was going on in his area. There was no water anywhere. And everything he was doing, he was being blocked. Every tefillah that he gave, everything was being blocked. And he couldn't figure out why. Baal Shem Tov is trying to think, what could I do? What could I possibly do? And finally, he's given a little hint from Shemayim, it's not about you. You can't daven for this. You have to get the drunkard to daven. So the Baal Shem Tov sends over two shluchim to send to that drunkard. The two shluchim go, and they see the guy is sleeping. So they said, all right, we'll wait until he gets up. So the guy gets up, he immediately takes the bottle, starts hitting the bottle, and he's gone. Goes again. He said, all right, I guess we'll wait for him to wake up again. He wakes up, he jumps up, runs to the nearest bar, takes a drink, he's gone again. He said, what are we going to do? So the next time when he wakes up, the two shluchim grab the guy right before he's about to run to the next bar. They grab him, they say, please, the Baal Shem Tov needs you to daven. He says, daven, I can't daven. I have to drink. I can't, my mouth is so parched, I can't even speak. They said, please, just daven, we need rain. So the man called out and he said, Hashem, they need rain. And as soon as he said it, the rain starts pouring down. So the two men, the shluchim, went back to the Baal Shem Tov, asked for the story, and the Baal Shem Tov told them over this story. That's what the Chiddush HaArim said in his Hakdama to understand how to understand Purim. We know that Yom Kippur is called Yom HaKippurim. So to speak, in Hasidic language, because it's not for real, it's the day that's like Purim. Which means, well, if you have something that's totally on something else, Yom Kippur is like Purim. That means Purim is the stronger, the Iker day, and Yom Kippur is secondary to it. As if to say, Purim is the most powerful day of the year. And Yom Kippur is only dependent, is only tului on what Purim is. If Purim goes well, then Yom Kippur is similar to it. It's a kid. It's a like Purim. But nothing is like Purim itself. The pshat is, and it's obvious, Yom Kippur is when we do tshuva miyira. We're afraid or in awe for a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Halavai was in awe of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And we do tshuva miyira. Tshuva miyira turns our zedonos, all of the averus that we have, turns them into shkagos. Turns them into accidental sins. But it's still a chait. It still is a chait. We still did a sin. It's just not as bad as it once was. But Purim is tshuva me'ava. Purim is when we do tshuva out of love. And when a person does tshuva out of love, does tshuva because he really wants to, because he's really putting himself into it, then everything he does, every aver he has, turns into a mitzvah. You know what that means? That means, on Purim, you have the ability to remember that time when you ditched Seder and you watched a movie instead. In Shamayim, the music, the video of your life, where they go through the whole video of your life, when they get to that point where you ditch Seder and you watch the whole video, there's like a little copy. It's sort of like a tss. And then all of a sudden there's a copy. And it's got you in the base medrash learning. Right? And then after that hour and a half, whatever it is, all of a sudden, and it goes right back to where you were. That's what Tshuva Me'ava is. Tshuva Me'ava is rewriting your life that never happened. It never existed. You didn't sit and learn in the base medrash. If you would have asked Adam Nemanim, people that were sitting down, did this guy learn in the base medrash during that time? They would tell you, no, we didn't see it. He wasn't there. But he was. In Shemayim, you were there. There's that little carpet guy. For them, they can't see anything else. Tshuva Me'ava turns it into something that's even greater. This is the pshat behind Purim. The Purim is the ability for you to do tshuva in such a fashion that you can turn everything into a mitzvah, anything you've done, into a mitzvah. And in that sense, we have the line, kol haposhet yad nosen lav. Now we know what this means. Everybody knows what this means. If you've ever gone collecting on Purim, kol haposhet yad nosen lav, that if I put out my hand and I ask for a donation, if I ask for something on Purim, you got to give me something. You have to give me something. It's the bane of every wealthy man's existence and the happiest line that any bachur in yeshiva will ever hear. Ever hear. Kol haposhet yad nosen lav. You can't say no to me. You got to give me something. And if you're going to give me something, it might as well be with a couple zeros behind it. And I don't mean dot zero zero. That doesn't count as anything. I mean like zeros and then a dot zero zero. That's what it should be. It's amazing. But the pshat is kol haposhet yad nosen lav is on this day. Your tefillah is so powerful because you're now in the level of Ava. Purim is the level of Ava, not Yira, of Ava. Your tefillahs are so potent that once they go up, kol haposhet yad HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're going to stretch out your hand to grab my tefillahs, no simla. It's going to be given to you. Such a powerful day, says the Chiddush HaRim. We can't trust ourselves. We can't trust a person to make the right decision on such a day. I can't allow a person who has that much power to have these silly requests that don't make any sense and are not good for him. It's not what he needs. It's not what he wants. I can't let him do that. And for that reason, we have the concept of drinking on Purim. Why a person drinks on Purim. It has nothing to do with, well, okay, it does. It does have to do with the fact that there was a Mishnah and that Esther and Ahasuerus were at a Mishnah. It shouldn't be like the Mishnah of Ahasuerus, right? There's stuff going on there, right? That might be a bit of a problem. But the concept of where the Mishnah comes from, where we say that you should become chayiv inish levasume bepuria adalo yada, you should get yourself completely inebriated. Levasume really means to become besummendik, to change yourself adalo yada until you can't tell the difference between Baruch Mordechai and Arur Haman. To that point, where does that come from? What's the pshat? Because we can't trust you. We can't trust you on a day like this. Yom Kippur, we trust you. You're like a malach. You're wearing all white. You're dressed up in the way you're supposed to be. On Purim, we can't. If we let you do that, you're going to mess it up. And we don't want you to mess it up. I have yet to see a person dress up on Purim with a kittel until he was drunk. And then, whatever, that's a different story. But I think it would be the greatest. That's the act. That's what you are. You're beyond a malach on Purim. And this is what it means that you're beyond a malach. On Yom Kippur, we fake it by wearing the kittel to make us look like we're a malach, to make us look like we're innocent, we've got everything going for us. That's what Yom Kippur is. On Purim, it's more than that. We're a human being who's greater than a malach and above all of the malachim. We're beyond everything. You should wear your normal clothing. That is your mask. That's your costume, so to speak. You're a regular human being that now has a power that you've never had before and nobody else has. Go into the king, and Yom Kippur, I get it. And Yom Kippur, I get it. I need my family, I need my friends, I need my... On Purim, it's even more powerful. You have the opportunity to daven like you've never davened before. And unfortunately, it's usually wasted. The first Maariv, you're so excited for Purim to start, you barely even know that you davened Shemona Esrei. You're going to remember the costume you have. You're going to remember the stuff you have in your hand that you're going to make noise with during Haman's name. That you'll remember. But do you have any idea what your Shemona Esrei was like? This sudden confuses us, knocks us out, and makes us think that the Ikar is the Megillah reading. When the Megillah reading is just a zecher for what happened before, yes, it's a mitzvah saseh, but we have another mitzvah that we have every day that we keep forgetting about that is so powerful, and it's us davening our Shemona Esrei. It's an unbelievable thing. And you can ask for anything. You can ask, and I'm begging you to do this, to have sipuk nefesh in your learning, to actually want to daven. It wasn't too long ago when Rabina stood up here and said that davening is boring and it's the worst thing in the world to do and you should only do it because you have to. And I get it. I told it over to some of the Tiv guys when I was in Eretz Yisrael and they're like, yeah, he says that every week. I hear that. I totally hear that. That is exactly what I would expect Rabina to say. I'm telling you, you have the ability to change that. On Purim, you could ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let me enjoy my davening. Let me find something that I so want to learn that I can't stop myself from learning. A guy writes me a text message. I keep asking him to learn with me and learn with me and learn with me. And he keeps saying, no, no, no. So finally he writes me a text message. And I appreciate this. I want this after a while. The guy says, you know why I keep saying no to you? Because I've never enjoyed my learning. And because I never enjoyed my learning, I don't want to find time for it. I hear that. I totally hear it. You know what I wrote back? I wish I could quote it for you. I'm not going to take my phone out. Right? But I wrote back. I said, you're a liar. You're a liar. Why? Because I know you enjoyed learning once. There was one time when I was with you and I taught you something and I remember your eyes lit up and you were like, that's awesome. That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. It was in a Tosfos in, I think it was Bava Kamma, and he loved it. It was the greatest thing he'd ever, and I remember what he said. So you're a liar. I know you love learning. You're just right now, your Yitzhar is getting a hold of you and you're giving the excuse of you not liking it. But if that's the excuse, you have Purim. That's what it's here for. Get up and say, I want to learn. See, by some yeshivas, they end by Purim. Those are fake yeshivas. Real yeshivas keep going until Zion Nisan. You've got 3 weeks afterward. Because if Purim is all about, you go to Purim and then you're done with learning for the next 6 weeks until the next month starts, you've missed out on what Purim is. Purim is all about getting yourself back to the base medrash, putting yourself in the base medrash, of trying to get yourself more into it after you just said Purim. If not, it's not there. I had a big suffix. I'll tell you, I had this really big suffix when Rabbi Polstein called me up and said that the high school, well, first, Rabbi Gaffin told me that the high school is taking off on Shushan Purim. They're not even having yeshiva. Do you know that? There's not even yeshiva on Shushan Purim. Right? I was sitting there. I'm like, seriously? How do you not have yeshiva on Shushan Purim? That's the whole point of Purim. Well, you have to sleep off the drinking? They're not even supposed to drink. I guess it's finally like admitting. It's just like, they're not drinking, they're doing drugs, so it's the same. Right? I get that. I guess I understand it. But for us, it should be that, okay, you drink what you need, and then you're done. And then the next morning you wake up and you're fine. You want chakras to start at 8:45? We'll start it at 8:45. We'll start at 8:45. And you come a little bit later, and everything's just different. You should be ready to sit in the base medrash and go around. That's the milo of what Purim is all about. That's what was a suffix to me to even ask people if they wanted to go on this ski trip that they're taking that day. Because, like, I know people have wanted to do it, and I know people were into it, but, like, should I take the day after Purim and make it into that? And then my figuring is that, well, odds are that anybody who's going to say yes probably won't be there on Shushan Purim anyway. I couldn't promise that, but the idea was, whatever, like, maybe that'll work. I have no idea. I wasn't sure, but I get it. I get the idea. So what is it? What are we doing? It is not about getting drunk. It is not about getting yourself so plastered that you can't remember where you were, where the next week you're trying to put pieces together and try to figure out exactly what happened to you and how you got from place A to place B. I've had enough guys like that in my house. They've thrown up in my fish tank. I don't like those guys. Those are not the people that I want. It's a guy who sits there and says to himself, he drinks to the point where his mind is cleared. He's no longer got those inhibitions, the embarrassment, the busha that's holding him back from asking the right questions. And he finally gets up there and he says, I've got a question to ask, a real question to ask. I have this question. I've wanted to know this for years, but I don't get it. Tell me this. And sometimes there's answers to that question, and sometimes there aren't. And sometimes the person has such a good question that the Rav just sits there and says, there's nothing I can do. I've asked questions like that. I've asked really good questions. They're tzarachin at the end of the day. Doesn't mean you're going to get the answers. That's Pesach. But you get yourself to the point where you're able to ask. You're able to do what you want. You're able to get rid of everything else. And you're able to get up. Hopefully you've davened mincha beforehand, right? But you're able to get up at some point during the day and you're able to say a tefillah like no other. A tefillah where it's not even really a Shemona Esrei. A tefillah where you say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I wish I had that desire for Mashiach to come. I wish I could actually want it. I wish I had that desire for learning to mean something to me. I wish my davening was completely different. I wish I could remember to bench every time and not have to be reminded by the guy, hey, did you bench yet? Yeah, I said it to myself. I wish that it could be easier. That's what you should be asking for. That's what this should be all about. After Yom Kippur, you have Sukkos. You go immediately into mitzvos. You jump into mitzvos right after that. What's going to be after Purim? What's going to be after your Purim? Are you going to go mechayel el chayel, or are you going to keep it as is, and that's that? I'm going to bring us back to that mashal for a second. You want to get to the point where you're davening and you're doing more and you're getting everything. I've got a suggestion, and I think it really should work, and I think we all can do this. Let's work on the first bracha of Shemona Esrei. If I'm going to ask you to concentrate on all of Pesukei de Zimra, or Birchas Kriya Shema, or everything that we say in davening, I don't think it's going to work. But I think it's possible for everyone, no matter where they are, to be able to have 15 seconds of concentration. 15 seconds where you can just hold your breath, kick everything else out, and just say to yourself, here's what I'm thinking. And actually have a tefillah of the first bracha of Shemona Esrei. If you need to read it inside in order for that to happen, sometimes when you read something inside, it's a lot easier. You need to do it in English. Will you read it in Hebrew and read it in English? I can get you a hatter for that. But it should be that at least your first bracha of Shemona Esrei is taken solidly and done in a proper fashion. Rest of Shemoneh Esrei, your mind can be going and fighting aliens. You're just like shooting, like thinking of everything else that you were thinking about. But the first bracha, take those 15 seconds and let's try to work on that together. The Chiddush HaRim gave this mashal. There was a guy who just said too much and he had to get drunk in order to not ask for the right things, for the wrong things. We should not even be thinking of the wrong things. And I think it starts with getting our Shemoneh Esrei in order. It starts with asking for the right things when we had a little bit to drink. For those who are over 21, if you're under 21, I can't know about it. I'm technically a narc now. So for those who are there, though, I want everybody to start looking at this and saying, what is this an opportunity of? What can I do to make this different? And if it's not the first bracha Shemoneh Esrei, if you've already gotten that down, you're set. You're solid. Your first bracha Shemoneh Esrei is down. Go to the second one. Try to do Mechayah Mesim that way. Go to the third and keep going until you can get a concentration, until you can concentrate for 4 minutes, 5 minutes without having to break it, without having to do it. I know you can do it. Everybody can do it. Everybody has this ability. But to be able to do it every time, first paragraph, 3 times a day, see what you can do with this. Let's ask for the right things, let's drink in the right way, and let's treat Purim like it really is, like a day of Yom Kippur Be'ahava, a Yom Kippur that's purely Be'ahava. All right, we'll stop.